Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
And you can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Coming up later in the show, we have the Apple Lovers Cookbook. Amy Traverso is back with us. You might remember many months ago we had her on the show. There were so many recipes in the book that we fell in love with. We talked about half of them, and we said we have got to have her back on. She is such a terrific guest, so enthusiastic and so talented in her choosing. So we thought it'd be fun to open the show right now in this first segment to talk about all kinds of Apple stuff and things that you could do. Nothing like Amy's terrific recipes, but we'll get you in the mood for what's coming later. How about apple cider? For some of you, apple cider is already out, and for others, it's coming. Yep. And I was thinking, what about apple cider popsicles?
There you go.
What do you think? You
that would
go?
Be delicious.
Wow. Okay. And
how about a little apple jack in it, too?
Well, I was going to say, you could make them for children or adults.
Yeah. Like a granita.
So adults, a little apple jack, and then for kids, just a plain apple cider popsicle.
Very cool idea. And you have the popsicle makers. I'm coming over to borrow those.
I do, but Jonathan was pointing out that they stay a little on the slightly softer side, fleshy side.
That makes them yummy.
You can still use the popsicle maker, but you want it, when you take them out, you might want to hand them to the kids in a bowl or your grown-up friends, so that if they start to get a little slushy on the stick, there you go.
Okay. Or make a granita out of it.
Got to be better for your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Not chomping into that hard for anything.
Yeah. So sorry, dentist.
Oh, but, whoops, sorry. No.
Okay. So here we go. What else could we think of that we? Oh, apples and ice cream.
Warmed apples
cooked in a stovetop in a little butter and cinnamon stovetop, and then in a sundae dish, because I like to think of it as an apple sundae, and then with as it gets syrupy and caramelized in the skillet, and I'd use a cast iron skillet for this, then into the bowl it goes, and then for me, vanilla ice cream. Some people might want cinnamon ice cream or vanilla. Whatever.
And why not add a little warm caramel sauce to that?
Look at that.
Thinking about it.
Yeah. Any nuts on there? Do you want any nuts?
If you'd like some nuts.
Toasted walnuts
on there. That's a sundae. That's an apple sundae.
Now, Jonathan was talking once about his mom making baked apples.
Yeah.
And that interests me, like whole apples.
Yeah, if you can tolerate having. Well, some people have the air-conditioned kitchen, so they'll turn the oven on all summer long. So what does your mom do?
Thanksgivings, and I don't know the whole thing. She bakes the whole apple, and it's all there, and you eat it kind of right out of the skin.
Yes.
The skin sort of makes a bowl.
Does she carve it out and stuff it with anything, as some people do?
It's basically just the apple. I think there's maybe brown sugar and
stuff in
so you could
inside.
Put like the ice cream in the apple
you could
bowl.
Do that.
Oh,
you could do that. You could do that.
Outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, why didn't your mom invite us over?
Thanksgiving. You're all invited. My mom just disowned me right on the radio.
Yeah.
Have her come on the show with us.
Okay, we can do that.
Bring the apples.
Bring the baked apples.
I'll bring
the vanilla ice cream.
That's the whole way to get on this show.
That's the food right
in the door. That's the way.
What could you grill to serve with apples?
Well, doesn't it have to be? The number one would be pork, of course.
So
what would we want to grill? Because a lot of the grills are still out, I hope. Because we certainly don't want to put those away until the end of October.
Pork chops?
Pork chops on the grill, right, at least. So pork chops on the grill, we could do...
Now, why couldn't you do a swordfish on the grill and then sort of make an apple chutney with some other types of fruit to put on there?
I don't know where to go.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would do that.
You would?
Yeah, I think, and we'll talk to Amy about how apples do
peaches.
Go with everything.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, good idea. Pork sausages.
Yeah. I got one. How about kielbasa? How about taking kielbasa, cutting it into lengths, right, little pieces, and then lengthwise so you get little slabs, and then doing apples the same kind of cut, little chunks, and put it on the grill together, take it all off the grill, rough chop it, and then toss it in a bowl with maybe some fresh sage. Right? Wow. Would that be a good, like, kind of sausagey kind of apple, grilled apple, sausage, sage, and maybe a drizzle of balsamic vinegar over the top?
Chris, that,
that sounds great. That sounds like I could do that.
Uh-huh, you could.
Right?
And then is there a variation of yours? I'm just spinning off of you because it's your creation. Yeah. I wonder if it's possible to take skewers and do a chunk of kielbasa and then a slice of apple and then a chunk of kielbasa, maybe onion. And just
food
go
on
down
a stick.
The row.
I bet you kids would
put
love
them on
that
the grill.
Too.
Right? On the grill.
It's basically a meat and fruit popsicle.
See? No, I think, no, you have it. That's it.
And then there's fondue, cheese fondue that we could dip the apples in.
Oh, great idea.
Which, that's a nice fall little meal right there. Bread and apples dipped in the cheese.
Bread and apples and just melt some cheese with some white wine.
And you'd want it on one of our cooler evenings right now.
Yeah, totally. Okay.
And
that's...
you could do a chocolate one for dessert and still use the leftover apples for that.
Yeah.
Nice. Ah.
No, you're right. You got it.
And
fondue.
Pound cake.
You're just making up things inventing just like crazy. Isn't that wonderful?
That's a great idea. Because we always forget those retro-y kind of fondue-y things.
Not
that's
me.
That's perfect. That's perfect for everybody who got married over Labor Day weekend.
That's right.
Got their fondue sets.
That's it.
Yeah.
Faith, do you I still have my fondue set and I still use it. Do you have a fondue kit?
Well, you know, I went to Canada. And
I went to Canada.
And, all right, where is this going?
There were two guys at a bar.
They just took a left turn right in the middle of the show.
No, you got to finish this now. I got to hear this.
This is like one of those stories that starts, I was born in 1962. Oh, my God. Okay, so I went to Canada. By the way, it was 40 below. And so we were, the second we laid our eyes on the fondue restaurant, which was nothing but fondues,
very
there were
cool.
hundreds of choices on the menu. We ran in there because we were crying. It was so cold. And I had the most delicious fondue. And I thought to myself, I haven't had fondue since I was in college. So I went out and bought a fondue pot, and it is covered with inches of dust.
It is time to take it out.
I haven't
it's
used
time it.
Say
to take
so.
It out.
I'm, and
Let's
now
just give
you've,
it as a wedding gift.
You've inspired regifting.
That's it, right?
Wow, you can never get rid of your fondue pot.
Well,
it's
I
like
haven't.
Something
once
everyone has to have.
I just think I'm going to use it. You use it once
a year.
Well, you've inspired me, Lori, to do it.
And with apples.
Yeah.
Well, apples, they're always good.
They are really
apples
good.
Apples and cheese, I think we should think more of light. Mm. That's a good combination. Mm.
Okay,
so
now,
how would you
possible.
Do apples and cheese?
Now, how about a grilled apple and cheese sandwich?
Oh, that's
my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would have to be on some like really sweet bread.
Yeah.
Yeah? What would you... like a fruit bread, you mean? Or a cinnamon swirl?
Oh,
there you go.
Cinnamon
Perfect.
Swirl
Perfect.
With some kind of creamy cheese.
Cinnamon swirl.
Cinnamon swirl fried up in some butter.
Yeah, and some creamy cheese.
Cheese whiz.
Cheddar. Okay.
No.
Cheese
cheddar,
whiz.
You think? Oh,
for
cheddar.
Me, cheddar.
Okay, sure. So,
did you want Gruyere?
Yeah,
you could
I wanted
Gruyere,
like a creamy kind of,
but
and then tart
Gruyere,
apples.
Would Gruyere work with the cinnamon swirl? I don't think so.
No, maybe not. But
no,
you know
we
what?
Want
how about
the cheddar with the cinnamon swirl?
Or how about a mascarpone?
Would that work with
that
the cinnamon swirl?
Yeah, it's sweet.
And don't
it's,
forget that ravioli stuffed with some sort of apple mixture.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of the mascarpone.
Because they stuffed, Lydia Bastianich does the pear-filled ravioli.
So why couldn't you do apple?
So you could do an apple, you know, just grated apple-filled ravioli. What would the sauce be that we
some
put
brown
on
butter,
top
of course.
Brown butter.
Why, naturally?
Wow. Did you hear? Listen to her go.
That's very stern Lori Knife right there.
I want to know what was in her coffee this
and
morning.
I want some. I want to sprinkle some toasted hazelnuts over that brown butter ravioli, apple-filled ravioli.
Jonathan and I just want to come for dinner. What time?
Yeah, right.
Lori, I think we need to get into the kitchen and start inventing together. Let's make all these things we've talked about.
I'll eat anything mad at apples.
300 pounds later.
Will you?
Yeah,
are you an apple guy?
We can add apples to our salad. Don't forget that.
Have you ever heard someone that you know say they don't like apples? That's one of the things. Right. I've never heard anyone say, I don't like apples.
There's one person, Kion Wolf. doesn't like fruit, period.
Okay. Yeah,
no
but what
apples,
if you,
no
what
berries.
If you snuck it in, like,
sometimes
with some of the recipes
allergic.
In Amy's book, though? How about if you snuck it in? Like, I remember when she was on the show last time.
See, this
we did
is
that
what
apple
chefs do.
Hash. We sneak it in there.
Nice.
Like that
Real
apple
nice.
Hash, remember it
you
had curry
to be
in
careful.
It?
Yeah.
But if
yeah.
she's not allergic, if she's not allergic, yeah. she just says, I don't like, who doesn't like an apple?
Chris, every
well,
Wednesday, what are you sneaking
people.
Into my food?
Oh, I've been sneaking so much stuff into your food, Jonathan.
Can I just mention, Lori had this idea okay. of adding sliced apples to the salad. And, yeah. and Lori, I would use cider in the vinaigrette.
Oh,
do a
nice.
Cider vinaigrette.
Showing me up.
Cider vinaigrette because when we get to later in the show, Amy Traverso, she's coming up next. She has this Apple Lovers Cookbook. If I recall, there is a cider vinaigrette
a
recipe
perfect.
In her book.
Perfect. What else
we
would
could
you
also
put in
just
that salad,
Google
though?
Online cider vinaigrette. Oh, so
gorgonzola cheese.
Nuts. Here I go
oh,
with my nuts
go.
Again.
How about
yeah.
gorgonzola cheese?
And toast those nuts.
Since
for
we
a
were going
minutes.
Apple and cheese, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little gorgonzola.
Okay.
That'd be
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Would you toast your nuts first?
Always.
Yeah.
I buy twice the amount because I burn them once. And then when I'm toasting them, because I always walk away while
and
they're
then
toasting.
And then you smell them.
And then I smell them and I run over and they're black.
I buy them twice as much because I eat half of them as I'm making them.
There's that too.
Well, if you're going to be on nuts, we can't really forget apples and peanut butter. That's
Ooh.
Always
I
a very nice
that
little
one.
Snack.
Please,
you know
absolutely.
That I've never
really?
Had that?
I'm with Faith.
That's
never
actually a good
really?
Sandwich, too, if you're – my dad used to eat apple and peanut butter sandwiches.
Really?
Yeah. Well, did you try it ever,
Jonathan? Oh, yeah, yeah. And banana and peanut butter sandwiches.
Sure.
I've that never, I've heard. I've heard
never,
banana.
I've never had that
I make
either.
That as a snack at my house.
My apple. Dad could have lived on that stuff,
apples
actually.
Apples and peanut butter.
Really?
Yeah.
I know. The sad thing about peanut butter is that we could – I could eat it every day.
Healthy.
I really could, but you know we'd be the size of buildings. So,
but it's got
can't.
Some good stuff in it. If
yeah,
you ate
you
a little
can.
Bit each day.
Well, if you ate one tablespoon, yeah. but you know when you want
to
make
can't.
A
that
sandwich, you want to make
no,
a
yeah.
sandwich.
No.
You don't put a tablespoon on your sandwich.
No, you need your mouth stuck closed by the time you're done eating. That's how you properly use.
I want to see Jonathan eat a peanut butter sandwich now.
And then when you do the nutter butter sandwiches,
yes.
then
oh, yeah.
your mouth really stays closed.
Nutter butter meaning the crunchy the, peanut butter?
That marshmallow.
With the, yeah.
Oh, those, yeah.
With the peanut butter
I've
on
never
the
liked
bread.
Those.
Would apples work with that? No, probably not.
I didn't, you know what? I'm starting to think apples can go with just about everything.
Yeah. Well, you're going to find out from the cookbook coming up that that is true, both savory and sweet. So I will tell you exactly what is coming up in Amy Traverso's book. She has done the Apple Lovers Cookbook. She not only has all kinds of charts and stuff about every possible kind of apple, and thanks to all of our farm markets and some savvy supermarkets, they're bringing in more and more of these antique or heirloom apples. We have more to choose from. She just simply says with every recipe, get one tart or get one sweet. She doesn't make it too complicated. Amy is senior food and home editor of Yankee Magazine, and she is also a food writer in all kinds of other magazines. When she was on last time, we had such a great time with her, so we've invited her back. The Apple Lovers Cookbook by Amy Traverso is coming up right after this short break. Please stay with us. Faith Middleton, the Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. You can discover our great guest and topic lineup and join our conversation on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, Gina Matruda, Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Marion Roy, our cookbook coordinator, producer Jonathan McNichol, and senior producer Lori Mack. Here's what we're going to do now. We're going to talk to someone we've spoken to before on the show, and that's Amy Traverso. She is so terrific as a guest and so talented with this cookbook that she did. It's called The Apple Lovers Cookbook. Every recipe in this book, both savory and sweet, involves apples. And there are all kinds of things about apples, as you will learn about all the new varieties and the heirloom varieties. And in each recipe, don't be intimidated, because it's not as if you have to have some rare heirloom apple. She will simply say you need a tart apple for this, a sweet apple for this, or a combination of the two in each of the recipes. So we wanted to talk with Amy again about some recipes that we thought would be perfect for right about now. Amy Traverso, welcome back to the Food Schmooze.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Well, of course, we turned right to something that we thought would be kind of fun to have, and that is the recipe for bacon-wrapped dates with curried apple hash.
This is such a great hors d'oeuvre. I got it from my friend Will Gilson, who's a chef here in Boston. You know, everybody, I think a lot of people at this point have tried bacon-wrapped dates, which are one of nature's great food combinations, particularly when stuffed with a nice cheese, in this case goat cheese and some rosemary. And then the apple hash is mostly a savory complement to the sweet dates. Apples, you know, a tart apple like a Granny Smith doesn't actually lend a lot of sweetness, but it goes really well in savory dishes because it plays well against spices and onions, and that's what this hash has. So you basically just finely chop an apple, cook it with some curry powder and other stuff.
Chris is often using curry powder as a secret back note in so many things he makes. Just a touch of it, and it adds complexity. And so, Chris, I knew you would love this recipe.
Yeah, that's a recipe right up my alley. Yeah. I think I'm going to incorporate that into my repertoire now because I love apples, and I never thought about making a hash out of them.
Bacon-wrapped dates
with
curry
apple hash.
You really
are the apple girl, aren't you? You are.
I'm Miss Apple New England.
You are Miss Apple USA.
You know, I did think of a title for you when I was working on the book the first time, and I thought Amy should be called Apple Maven.
Oh, I love that.
The Apple Maven. I like that too.
How about a website for you, Apple Maven? Do you like that?
I love that.
Okay, good. You're all set.
Okay. Thank you.
And a bill will be coming so quickly.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, here we go. Chicken liver pate, which I adore in all forms, and I thought, wow, chicken liver pate with apple. Tell me about this.
It's definitely one of my favorites, and I get so much good feedback on this. A, because it's delicious. B, because it's easy to make. It's a big hit at parties, and you can freeze it, so you can actually make it ahead of time and have it on hand. Mm. The flavors are the chicken livers, onion, shallot, some apple, and some apple brandy. And now you can use either Calvados, which can be kind of pricey and is delicious, but you can also use Applejack, which is sort of the maybe slightly less refined American version of apple brandy, but no less delicious. I think Applejack is fantastic.
Buy American. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. And the recipe was inspired by a dish that Michael Field, who was quite a well-known cookbook author and cooking teacher, developed. I added my own spin to it, and I would recommend this. Even if you're not a real cook, this is a very manageable recipe.
And I just am crazy about chicken liver, and I can almost see how the duskiness of the chicken liver would match well with apple. I've never thought about that before. It's a great idea.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was developing the recipes for this book, I thought of apples as really being about a balance of tartness, sweetness, and some sort of aromatic flavors, which could be berry-like or wine-like, depending on the variety, or lemony. A lot of, you know, different apple varieties have different flavors. And so it's fun to think about cooking with apples because you're sort of thinking, okay, how much acidity do I need in this recipe? How much sweetness do I need? And, you know, apples go so well with chicken liver, with pork, with even with, you know, I have a cider braised brisket in the book. I didn't think apples could go with beef, but in this case, tart apples do go quite well. So this case, you would want a tart apple to play off the richness of the chicken liver, something like a McIntosh or a McCoon or McCown, depending on where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good use for those apples, which are easy to find.
I should say that not only is Amy a lifelong apple lover, Amy Traverso, our guest, but she is also senior food and home editor of Yankee Magazine. She was before that food editor of Sunset and Boston magazines. I forgot to say all that good stuff. Now, well, here's what happens when the vegetarian comes to dinner and everybody else is not vegetarian. What do? We put down a plate of pasta in front of these poor people.
Or a
and
salad.
So at every house, somebody puts down a bowl of pasta in front of them over and over again, or and maybe a little bit of tofu with some tomato sauce on it. And so thankfully, Amy has included a recipe in her book which could serve as a wonderful entree for the vegetarian, but also a beautiful side for the rest of the people at the table. So this is something that works in a lot of ways, and I'm talking about a squash and apple gratin.
I really love this one because it's such a great use of the tartness in the apple playing against the sweet nuttiness of the squash. And then you have some Gruyere cheese in there to give it a savory note, a little bit of you make a breadcrumb topping with some garlic and some nice crusty bread and a little bit of rosemary. So the flavors you're getting are kind of onion, Gruyere, apple, rosemary, and a little bit of garlic and nutmeg.
You really make us rethink the apple. That's what I love about this book, because you're doing things with apples that I would never, ever think of doing. And then as soon as you read the recipe title, you're like, of course that would work.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. That's kind of a recipe developer's dream.
No, I mean, the apple is really more versatile than you would think, right? Person would think.
It really is. I think, you know, what I hope people will do, if they don't know apples very well and they maybe for now have mostly access to supermarket varieties, you know, just cooking with some Granny Smiths versus some Gallas and knowing which recipes to use them in the book, you know, kind of gives you a chart that helps you know. First, it'll broaden your sense of what you can do with apples, the types of dishes you can do, and then hopefully inspire you to go to your farmer's market and try some of those unusual apples that you see and that have such amazing flavors. I mean, apple varieties that date back to 1600 that we can still eat today. It's so exciting.
What is something that you can say at your farmer's market to the person at the stand to say, I want to try something, just a good eating apple, but something different that I've never had before? Would it go like that? What would you say at the farmer's market?
Yeah, I think you can ask, do you grow any antique or heirloom varieties? More and more farms, and I love this, it's such a positive trend, are ripping out Red Delicious orchard, you know, trees in their orchards and putting in Bramley seedling and Cox's orange pippin and Roxbury russet. There is a market for premium heirloom or antique apples, however you want to describe them. I live in the Boston area. I find many, many more orchards growing these apples now. You can ask them for that. And, you know, there are apples that a lot of farms grow that aren't completely unusual, but you may not have tried. Apples that tend to only show up at the farm stand, you know, Spencer's and Wismers, and some of the apples that are fairly popular, but don't tend to make it into supermarkets.
Yeah, but do you find that's like two-sided? Because it is exciting that there are all these apples, but for me, even as a chef, sometimes it intimidates me. I walk into these places, into these farmers markets, and used to see like a bin, maybe four different apples or five different apples. Now you walk into these farmers markets sometimes, and there's bins of like 30 different apples. And I get kind of intimidated and like, am I supposed to know what all these are and what goes with what and what would be a good baking apple?
Right. And there aren't enough guides. There isn't enough information out there, and apples, you know, a Macintosh will perform completely differently under heat than, a Granny Smith. A Granny Smith will tend to hold up well, or a Pink Lady apple will hold up pretty well in heat. A Macintosh will turn into applesauce in no time. So we
that
need
happened
that
to my pie.
Yeah.
It, right?
My brother used to make Macintosh pies, and they're delicious. I love the flavor of a Macintosh when they cook, but it's definitely a better apple for applesauce. And so when I first started thinking about this book, I thought, okay, well, I just want to develop a bunch of fun recipes with apples because I like apples. And I started looking at the way other people do recipes, and I realized the problem is we don't know which varieties to use, and we have all of these varieties at our disposal, thank goodness. So the book, the real focus was to break it all down into these categories so that you could understand, okay, firm tart apples tend to behave this way, firm sweet apples do this, you know, and
well,
make it easy.
And may we put out a plea to our farmers markets to put up a little sign, it's called a shelf talker, and say about each apple, not only its qualities, but underneath it would be good for the following things.
It's a great idea.
So farmers market people, you know, we're big farm supporters here on the show. That would be a wonderful, wonderful thing to, and you will sell more apples that way. It'll really work.
Yeah.
Okay, Amy, let's get back to, we're talking with Amy Traverso, and she has done the Apple Lovers Cookbook. and it is both sweet and savory recipes. Everyone has apple in it. Welsh rarebit, one of my favorite things, with apples. Of course, that goes together, cheese and apples.
Here's the sort of ultimate midnight snack. You know, it's Welsh rarebit is this wonderful cheddar and ale sauce. It's a cheese sauce that you make, and you broil it on toast. And in the case of this recipe, I added some very thinly sliced tart apple. What a great combination.
Very retro yet new with the apples. I love it.
And it has that stout in it. Guinness is a good choice, although you can't quite tell. It just gives it this dusky, dusky quality.
I was a beautiful brown color, too.
Yeah. I was on the Cape at a place where the man is from Wales, and he made his family's, on the menu is his family's Welsh rarebit. And I hadn't had it in probably 15 years, and I ordered it. I just ate the whole thing so quickly. It was so good.
Give me the book. I got to take that recipe home. Yeah. I haven't had Welsh rarebit in like 15 years either.
It's good.
Now I want it with apples.
Just a bowl of bread, you know, cut up bread pieces on the table, and it's bubbly and warm. It's sort of the
new nachos.
Wow, you could totally bring that Welsh rarebit back with that slogan.
You know what I'm gonna it's do? I'm gonna the have new nachos. Welsh rarebit food truck, and I'm going to be a huge hit.
That's a great idea. We need more food trucks.
Yeah.
Okay, let's try something for breakfast, and that would be your baked apple French toast with a hazelnut crumb topping.
Oh, my.
I like that.
My whole strategy with breakfast dishes, I am not the most functional person first thing in the morning. I really like having people over for breakfast, and I love having overnight guests, and I love making them a really gorgeous breakfast, but I don't want to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and do something, you know, really complicated. This is one of those dishes that you prepare the night before. It takes very, very little time. I've, you know, had sort of the last minute realization that I had people coming over and it's 11 o'clock and the night before and I've got to throw something together. This is a good dish for that as long as you have some bread on hand.
And let me explain what Amy means by looking at your steps. Three steps. So the night before, or you could do it 2 hours ahead, depending on whether you're an early riser, or maybe your guests get up at noon. So the night before.
So I'm the guest.
Jonathan's over, started 11.
The night before, you just grease a baking dish with a little butter and whisk together eggs, milk, brown sugar, vanilla, salt, cinnamon, and nutmeg. That's it. Arrange your bread slices in the dish so that they overlap. Stick apple slices in between the bread slices, then pour your egg mixture over the whole thing, cover it with a plastic wrap, that bowl, and chill it overnight. Then you get up in the morning and just preheat the oven. Previously, you have in the processor pulse some hazelnuts, brown sugar, flour, and butter to form this crumbly mixture. And when you get up in the morning, you sprinkle that topping over the bread and just bake it until the custard is set and put them.
And your guests will never go home.
Is this what you have for breakfast every day?
Yes, every single day we get up. Living a fantasy life.
Me too. My limo's waiting downstairs. How about you? It is just not fall without an apple crisp. Although I must tell you that I could eat apple crisp every minute of every day. It is so delicious to me. And is this your grandmother's apple crisp recipe?
Yeah, I love this recipe started it all, honestly. It's a recipe I grew up on. I think it cemented my love of apples. And it's different. I have to say, I think apple crisp is probably my single favorite food. And there are two kinds. There's the traditional oat-topped apple crisp, which is fantastic, and I recommend it. This one's different. This is somewhere between a sweet biscuit and a cake topping, but it's crunchy. And it's different because the only liquid you use when you're mixing this, the topping, which looks kind of streusely, is egg. Just some flour, some sugar, baking powder, and salt. And then you add two eggs, and you stir them in there until the mixture gets very crumbly. And then you drizzle butter over the top, and you sprinkle it with cinnamon. It's the non-cook's apple crisp. It could not be easier or more foolproof.
Is it sugary?
It's quite sweet. Good amount of sugar. Yeah, it's quite sweet. So you want a mix of tart, firm tart, or even tender tart. You could use Macintosh here, as long as you have some firm apples, because Sometimes if you use a tender apple when you bake either a pie or a crisp, what you get is this nice texture where you have the soft sauce of the Macintosh apple that cooks down, and then you have these slices that are kind of suspended in it from the firm apple. Mm-hmm. So that's a really nice thing to do with apple crisp. And then you have this kind of crisp topping that's quite sweet and buttery. This recipe actually came from a magazine that my grandmother found in 1945, this magazine called Country Gentleman, and she clipped it out and saved
cool.
it. And I have the original clipping. And, you know, this is one of those lost or forgotten recipes. A lot of people haven't tasted apple crisp like this, but I can't recommend it enough. My grandmother, Mary Coyeroli, she lived in Woodsor Locks, Connecticut. I grew up in Connecticut, too.
Uh-huh. Very cool.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that now that chefs have gotten more savvy in a kind of French way about not over-sugaring things to cancel out the flavors of the rest of the ingredients, what's happening for me is that they're now under-sugaring things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all tart apple flavor in your crisp when it comes to the table or whatever the fruit might be in the crisp. It's very, very tart. And so now for me, there's not enough sugar in any half the desserts that I make. This is happening at bakeries, too. So that's why I asked you, is there sugar in this topping? Is there enough sugar? So I'm thrilled about it. This is a debate I have with Carol Peck all the time
yeah.
because she's on the other side of the tracks from me on this one.
Well, this is a recipe that is not sophisticated. It is all about deliciousness and coziness and uh-huh. childhood happiness.
Put ice cream on top.
You have a recipe for Williamsburg Rapples. And this is from the Williamsburg General Store and has a glaze on it. It looks like an empanada in a way.
You take pie dough, you make the pastry, you roll it out, you layer the apples on, and then you roll them up like a little hand pie or like a jelly roll. So it's a handheld apple pie. Someone told me yesterday, a reader of the book, that this is better than apple pie. This is better.
Yum.
Looks like it. That's so great. Amy, once again, so great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Amy Traverso, who is not only a lifelong apple lover, but senior food and home editor of Yankee Magazine. And she is author of this book, The Apple Lover's Cookbook, back on the show with us again. Please support your local food growers and food makers. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
Chicken. Chicken's a popular bird. Anywhere you go, you're bound to find the chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Some folks call it a fowl. That's the story I heard. But let them call it this and let them call it that. A chicken ain't nothing but a bird.
I'm Faith Middleton. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Follow us on Twitter at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. Chris Brassberry is here from Metro Bee's Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. This book, cookbook, we can't wait to tell you about. It's called Quick Fix Indian. Easy, exotic dishes to be made in 30 minutes or less, which is unusual for Indian food. If you love it as we do, or you've tried the real thing, you just, you know, when you're new at this, you just smack your forehead and think, I can't do this. So we have chef and author Ruta Kahate, who shows us how to do this in a much more effortless way to make these Indian dishes from pantry to stove to table. And there are more than 100 recipes in here. Ruta, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. You must hear what I just said often.
Yes.
That we're all intimidated by Indian food, the real recipes.
Right. And that sort of has been my mission for the last, over 10 years, is to show people that Indian food is accessible. You know, it's not always labor-intensive and, you know, taking 25 steps and, you know, 100 ingredients. It can be fresh and quick.
Let's start with your recipe for an egg roll. Everyone is going to think that I'm talking about Chinese takeout.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, but no.
No.
No, tell us about yours.
The egg roll. The egg roll actually is, it's more like, almost like a sandwich, you know. If you had to make a sandwich with an omelette and bread, it's kind of similar. So it's basically chapati, or I just, for a quick take on it, I just use tortillas. And you simply make an omelette with the onion and cilantro and some ground cumin and turmeric. And you make it super thin, and you roll it up in a flatbread, and it becomes an egg roll.
So, Ruta, is that your invention, or is that a traditional street food?
It is. It's a type of street food, and also eaten at home very often. So it's sort of like, you know, when a kid wants a quick snack, or there's simply nothing in the house, very often people will just, you know, because there's always flatbread lying around, and you would, you know, make this up.
Yeah. It sounds like a breakfast burrito to me.
Right? It does. You know, that's the fun thing when certain foods go across cultures.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I was just thinking about here in New Haven, we have Tali, and Prasad has a Mexican restaurant called Oaxaca, and he says it's because the foods of India and Mexico are very similar.
Yeah, the spices.
The spices, yes, the spices are similar.
And the use of bread, you know, beans and rice. Yeah. And the egg roll is in the breakfast chapter, actually, so good catch.
Yeah.
So here's a thing that is interesting to me, because I like to mix it up in the morning with trying different things instead of the same thing every day, as many of us do. So one of the favorite experiences I've had was to go into New York to a place that served steamed fish. This was in the cafeteria of Takashimaya.
Uh-huh.
And they did the steamed fish in this Japanese restaurant for breakfast.
Wow.
In this lovely sort of elegant broth. And so it was gentle, but it had protein, and it was warming. And I was very enchanted with your breakfast chana masala. And you said that in the state of Goa, this is coastal India, they serve this all the time. Explain what this is.
Okay. So this is not, I was kind of looking at the recipe again, and I realized, you know, most people associate chana masala with a tomato-based sauce, or at least a brown sauce. But this is different in the sense that since it's from Goa, it has coconut. So it is really, it's one of my favorite breakfasts, and it is very common in Goa. Very often we'll drop the kids off to school and, sneak out for breakfast. And because there's all these yummy things to be had, breakfast in India, just like you pointed out with other Asian countries, there's no special... It's separate cuisine. I mean, it's, you know, you either eat leftovers or you have a real food. So chana masala, this is, you know, chickpeas or dried peas even, that are cooked in a toasted coconut and spices masala.
Yeah, and this is unsweetened coconut.
And
the spices are coriander and cumin and turmeric, and it's in hot water, and you can use canned chickpeas, which will make everybody delighted, and green serrano chili, and fresh cilantro, which is in almost everything that I love, and apple cider vinegar, and a little bit of salt if you can take it. And so this is served warm. You have all that protein from the chickpeas and the great stuff from all these spices. So I love that as a breakfast.
I like savory breakfast, to be honest. And this, you know, these sort of things, they even have a very similar masala, not quite the same thing, but again, coconut and spices, with shrimp, actually dried shrimp recipes for breakfast. So in Goa, so it's very unique, and boy, it starts my day off right.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a great way to start the day.
So we are talking with Ruta Kahate, who is author of this book and paperback called Quick Fix Indian. And she lives in both India and in the San Francisco Bay Area. That sounds divine to have that little thing going on. How about the grilled chicken wrap? This is your Indian take on it.
Right. Again, you know, Indians love wrapping things in flatbread, sort of the burrito concept. This was my take on it. It just started one day trying to feed my children, and all I had was some chicken breast lying around. So it's really simple. This is actually the same, the picture on the cover. You just grill off some chicken with spices and some ginger garlic, and then I like to serve it with what I call the Indian chopped salad. So it's lots of fresh vegetables and orange thrown in, so beets and cucumbers, tomatoes. You've got everything in one wrap. And, you know, the kids love it. It's pleasing. It's pleasing to almost anybody I've ever served.
And it has ginger paste and garlic paste in it. And you tell at the beginning of the book how to whip those up. And you can always have that sort of sitting around to, as we say, schmear on just about anything. When we all do, we were talking about your chopped salad. And when we all do salads, we tend to go to the same kinds of salads. So when somebody mentions something a little bit outside the box, it's refreshing and fun to go to, over to somebody's house to eat and to have them come out with something different. And so this is a shredded carrot coconut salad.
Yum.
Wouldn't that be a nice surprise to serve that? We're talking about, of course, shredded carrots. You just use a box grater and unsweetened coconut, a little bit of chili, and fresh cilantro, and then the squeezed lime juice,
right.
Canola. And if we had just gotten that far on the list, I would say that does sound Mexican. And then, but then you add mustard seeds. I don't know if the Mexicans do that, but that would be much more traditional Indian.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, you know, I do say this in the book, and I'd love to tell you as well. Salads in India are generally, you know, I call them salads, but really they're used more like a relish or a condiment, so you don't necessarily have a lot of it. I remember my dad used to make fun of me because I would love to serve large salads, Indian style, but large. And he'd be like, what is this, health food? Why am I eating a big, giant bowl of carrots? Where's the rest of my meal? So, usually they're served in small quantities. So most of the recipes in this section, you know, it'll be like a cup of shredded carrots or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the other unique thing about salads in India are they're very often dressed with a hot oil dressing, which is called variably tadka or fodni or bagar or whatever. You know, from different parts of India, you have a different term for it. But basically, it is you heat up a little bit of oil, and you're going to cook your mustard seeds in it. So it's either mustard seeds or cumin seeds. Some people like to take it further by adding, say, chopped green chili to it, or even sometimes, you know, a pinch of turmeric. So it's a hot dressing, it's oil infused with flavor and spices, and then you put this on top. So the shredded carrot coconut salad truly is taken to a different level once it's got that toastiness, you know, added to it.
Well, there is a, for protein lovers, it was a chicken coming up, of course, and this is a green pan-roasted chicken, and everybody's going to say, well, what makes it green? And what makes it green is this green masala. So can you tell us how you make that and how you use it on this chicken?
Well, masala, you know, means different things, actually. So it's like a dried spice blend, or it can be a wet ground paste. I have a little shortcut shelf in the book, which tells you to make a few things ahead of time. And again, they're very simple. So if you don't have the time to make it ahead of time, it's, you know, you can still do it. You can still do it within the 30-minute, you know, time frame that I've been given. So it's cilantro, green chili, a little cumin, lemon juice. You just basically grind it up in a blender, and you've got a green masala. And this is, you know, I borrowed the red and the green masala from the state of Goa. It's paradise, and I'm just spending half my time there now. Mm. And it's...
Don't brag.
Oh, I could go on. But the masala, if you just, you know, normally I still, you know, like to make everything fresh. But these two masalas, they keep very well in the fridge, and they're great to have on hand. So the green masala, if you have it in a jar in the fridge, you just bring it out, and literally you just rub it on the chicken, leave it aside for a few minutes, and then just to sort of kick it up a notch, you would add some whole spices to the oil before you add your chicken to it.
And that brings out the flavor and the spices.
Yeah, so it adds, you know, an additional layer of flavor. So the green masala itself would have done just fine. I mean, you could rub these on and even barbecue the chicken breast. But I love it done like this. So use chicken parts with, like, bone-in chicken parts, because they roast better.
And they taste better.
They taste better, I agree.
This is Ruta Kahate, who's author of Quick Fix Indian. It is out in paperback. And since Chris and I are both fans of eggplant, you have a recipe for pan-fried silky eggplant. And you're going to find in this recipe those traditional spices mixed in again. Tell me about this, because you're using that little short recipe you have for a ginger paste. These you can have on hand in your refrigerator if they're the wet paste, or just kind of in a jar if they're not. But go ahead.
Eggplant is native to India, so I mean that's kind of where it came from, and there's different kinds of eggplant, and so therefore there's just this wealth of recipes. Different sizes of eggplant are treated differently.
Hmm.
So the globe eggplant, or you know, the larger Italian eggplant, what we know as Italian here, they are saved just generally to either roast whole in a coal fire or to slice them and use them for pan frying. And what I like to do is just rub some ginger paste, which I've mixed in with some cayenne, turmeric, and coriander, all ground to a powder, and then just pan fry it. And to me, this is one of the most divine ways of treating eggplant, because it gets that lovely caramelized skin, but it's meltingly tender inside. And it goes with absolutely anything. I mean, I throw this in a piece of crusty bread
and sandwiches.
Ruta, you're our kind of woman. So there's a vegetable that I think needs help, and that's cauliflower. I find it just the most boring thing in the world if it's left on its own, and not to insult anyone. So you have your version, which is a pepped-up cauliflower.
And it's funny, we were just talking about the same list of ingredients that we just used for the eggplant and how different it can taste. So we've got the ginger paste, which is simply ginger that's been ground to a paste. You can either buy this in the store if you get a good brand, or just make it yourself. And again, ground coriander, ground cumin, and ground turmeric. You mix these all up, and what I do is I actually add it to the oil. So I heat up a little bit of oil, and I will add this paste to it. It cooks down the ginger real quick, takes the edge off the spices, and then it just becomes this smoky kind of addition to the cauliflower. And once you've cooked the cauliflower in this, it has changed from, you know, a dull vegetable to a very flavorful one.
We've just done that with cauliflower.
Uh-huh.
So Ruta, what would be your take on doing something interesting with something neutral, such as mashed potatoes?
Uh-huh. So I have yet another strange recipe, but you know, there's two ways. I have one ingredient that's called brown onions, which is basically caramelized onions taken to the next level. So they're just cooked till they're crisp. I love to just throw those on some mashed potatoes, which those are one of my shortcut shelf recipes. Keep those on hand, and you can throw them on many, many things. So that's one way. And then the other thing I like to do, which initially sounds a little strange, but it really tastes great. So basically, it's my two of my favorite vegetables together, which is onions and potatoes. So you cook up your potatoes, mash them, get them ready, and then you're going to make a sort of a dressing with oil, canola or mustard oil, if you can actually get your hands on that.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
It is. And you'd heat that up. You add mustard seeds. You cook them till they pop, which just takes a few seconds. Stir in turmeric, which is ground, and cayenne, and a little chopped red onion. You know, I'll just saute that for a bit to take, just soften it very slightly, and then I throw it on with, of course, the ubiquitous cilantro.
Mm.
And it's a very different dish from plain old mashed potatoes.
That is so good. I wonder, you know, I have a secret source for my mustard oil.
Uh-huh.
That would be Prasad. I hesitate to mention it because everybody would be knocking on his door saying, oh, can you make it for me? So I wonder where you would get mustard oil. Could I find it in an Asian market?
You know, it's freely available in Indian markets.
Do we have one?
We have one in the Hartford area called Cosmos, and they have mustard oil. That's where I get
really?
Mine.
Really? Can you get it for me?
Yeah, definitely. It's on Farmington
Sorry,
Avenue.
We're just taking care of some private business.
It's on Farmington Avenue, and all these ingredients you can get there. It's a really cool store. What I like about the book, though, is you don't really need that so much.
Right, exactly. Thanks for pointing that out. I mean,
right?
It's that I want it.
Yeah, of course. It's mentioned. Those oils are mentioned there. The, you know, the peanut, sesame, the alternative stuff is mentioned there for people like you who want to go that extra step. Mm-hmm. You know, folks who are already intimidated enough. You know, I don't want to freak them out. So it works.
Slow steps.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's also, I wish we had time, a wilted spinach with red chili and so many other things. And so when we're done with this interview, Chris and I want your address because we're coming to see you.
Goa.
Thank you.
Yeah, in Goa, not here.
In Goa, exactly. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you.
You're so much fun. Ruta Kahate, that's Kahate. It's in paperback. It's called Quick Fix Indian, Easy Exotic Dishes in 30 Minutes or Less. The Food Schmooze airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.